What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast still unable to resist leathering a stray conker. Coming up, War of the Roses, Edward's D-Day, a monk just about in the Abbey, and Butt Out. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we are back, as is the majority of the Football League after last weekend's truncated programme. We're ready to get into it full throttle this coming weekend. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined by my two EFL experts. Hello, Sam Parkin.
Hello, Matt Davis-Adams. How you doing?
Yeah, I can't complain. Nobody had listened. Adrian Clark's with us too, moments away from jet setting across the globe. As is your want.
I've had a shave for it as well. Give me noticed. I'm looking clean cut. Had a haircut, shave, ready to unwind.
Just to give you a little insight, listener, into the opposite ends of the spectrum of the football media game that we are at. Clark is going to Dubai. I'm going on holiday to North Wales. Quite right too. I never played for Arsenal, so I shouldn't be able to do a football.
Hey, all that money's long since run out. Don't worry about that.
Do us a favour. We're looking to raise some funds. Maybe you could help us. Leave us a nice review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your pods. It all helps us grow the show and find new listeners. You can follow us on X at EFL What The and What The EFL on other platforms too. We are also delighted to say that we've partnered up with Quinbet for another season. To celebrate that, Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. I'll put that in the description of the show to make it easier for you. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and they run the National Gambling Helpline. Okay, we're going to start today by previewing the weekend's action, which gets underway under the Friday night lights at Elland Road, where two Uniteds divided by inter-county rivalries square off as Leeds face the Blades of Sheffield. Leeds fifth after drawing their last two at Norwich and Sunderland. Clarkie, do you think Ilan Meslier has recovered from what happened at the Stadium of Light? Yes, an awful long time for him to wait for another game to put it right.
Oh, that's true. I mean, it was one of the worst, wasn't it? It's hard to sort of top that kind of era. I actually thought Leeds played pretty well in that game, or very well for large parts of that game. So it was quite cruel on them to be denied the win. A little bit of a fallout, wasn't there, around that mistake? I don't know if you spotted this, with Junior Firpo stormed down the tunnel. He wasn't happy. And then Meslier himself got a little bit of stick from supporters because he was sort of seen having a laugh and a joke with Regis Lebris afterwards, but he knows him from his time in French football, so that they sort of go back a long way. But I suppose it's not a great look when you've just cost your team, you know, a couple of big points to be caught smiling. And it's not the crime of the century, is it? But yeah, I'm sure he's had plenty of time to dwell on that error. And look, be interesting to see how much he's tested in this game by a really good Sheffield United team, isn't it? Who tend to start games really quick. So I think Leeds have got to be switched on. They don't want to be chasing this game. I think they've got two really informed players, Leeds, haven't they? Willie Nonto, who was brilliant, I thought, against Sunderland. He's on fire at the moment. And Joel Pirou, who's scoring 1.45 goals per 90 minutes, mainly because he keeps scoring off the bench. But, you know, this guy deserves starts at the moment. So they're two obvious danger men. I thought the midfield did really well against Sunderland. It was obviously the makeshift midfield with no Ampadu and no Gruev for the sort of, you know, foreseeable, really. Rothwell came in alongside Tanaka, the Japanese international, and they both did really well in that game. So it'll be interesting to see if they can maintain it, because Sheffield United are particularly robust inside that engine room. They've got some really strong players. Yeah, how will they fare? Especially for Tanaka, who played for Japan against Australia, I think, in Japan just a matter of hours ago. So he's got to hot foot it back to Elland Road for this one. So yeah, look, it's going to be a great game. Not much to choose between these two sides, I'd say. The bookies have Leeds down as overwhelming favourites to win the game. I don't quite see it that way. But yeah, they'll certainly look to get the 3 points. The big boost for them is Manus Solomon and Dan James are likely to be fit. And I think that will make a big, big difference to them in terms of not just what they do from the start, but what they can do mid-game. If things aren't going to plan, they can maybe bring on one or two excellent players to influence it.
As for Sheffield United, Sam, they would be top if it wasn't for that points deduction. It's only goal difference that's keeping them behind Sunderland. And you think about goal difference, or at least I do always think about the amount of goals a team has scored, but it's kind of been the opposite end of the pitch, which has been the real boost for Chris Wilder, hasn't it, so far? Clean sheets in each of their last six games and only conceded three goals all season. That is exceptional.
Yeah, two against QPR. I just reminded myself of, which is incredible when you think of the contrasting starts of the season. One point, you can tell me the other goal that's gone in against them.
Luton?
Good for the listeners, this. Josh Sargent in a 1-1 at Carrow Road. So, QPR doubled that, trebled that, sorry. Miraculously. So, yeah, they've been incredible. I think, obviously, it coincided with Michael Cooper coming in goal, someone that we have talked up copious times on this podcast over the years, and the blossoming partnership between Suter and Armin Hodzic at centre-half, probably two players that will have a stab at the Premier League, if not with Sheffield United, with someone else again, I would suggest. So, no, they've been brilliant in that department. And you're waiting for the front players really to come to life. Their joint lowest scorers in the top eight with West Brom currently. And you'd expect that to change and to improve. So they're sitting pretty despite, you know, not having that real chemistry at the top end of the pitch. And spoke about Brewster's role last time in the side. It'd be interesting if he can get Hamer in the starting lineup here. Came off the bench in the last game. How's that front line going to look with O'Hare, Rak-Saki? These are potentially really exciting players that haven't caught fire as of yet, but I'm confident they will. And this game will always evoke memories for me of that famous game 2019, the Chris Basham goal, if you remember, when both of them were going for automatic promotion. And Leeds, I think it was the year they tripped up against Derby in the playoffs, and Sheffield United went on from that night to achieve under Chris Wilder with those players that were so brilliant for him in that championship success and then leading into the Premier League achievements. So big night, amazing that it's on the Friday to restart the championship. And I expect it to be incredibly tight, probably low scoring, and it'll be a statement win. Certainly be a statement win for Sheffield United. Leeds have been so good at home. And I don't know, you would not be surprised if these two are the top two on current form. You know, and putting aside the wonderful start Sunderland have had and what Burnley potentially could become, you know, at the moment, my money would probably be on these two.
Yeah, and as Clarkie says, Leeds are favourite with Quinbet, 17-20 at time of recording, 16-5 for an away victory there. It will be the first match for Sheffield United since news last week of the death of their former player, George Baldock. United fans have raised £4,000 for a banner commemorating him, which will be on display at Bramall Lane soon. All right then, another big game in the Championship at Kenilworth Road, where Luton have had an atrocious start to life back in the Championship. They host Watford in what the BBC are billing as the M1 Derby. Not having that.
Not having that.
No. Either way, it's a biggie at the best of times, but it feels particularly huge this time around. Sam, Luton's worst start to an EFL season in 22 years. They've only scored 8 goals. Only Cardiff and Preston North End fewer than that. Elijah Adebayo got double figures in the Prem last year. He hasn't got one so far. Good job for Rob Edwards that he got that new 4-year contract in the summer.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be talking about a lot of teams. In fact, I am talking about pretty much every team in the EFL that can't score for love nor money today, doing some notes this morning. So, yeah, I mean, Luton, they did change things up for that defeat at Sheffield United, but obviously it's reached a bit of a crescendo, can I say that, in terms of the supporters and the negativity and obviously the reaction at full time at Bramall Lane. I think that's probably as bad as it's become. I spoke to some members of the staff before the Argyle defeat, and obviously that was on the back of some difficult results and difficult performances. So yeah, there's obvious questions about Rob Edwards' future at the moment. I think that, you know, he can be comfortable enough that there's really good people in charge at Luton, and you'd like to think there'll be the continuity and the backing in the short term, but the results have been poor for so long, and the results, the wins have been so infrequent that obviously the reality is that the supporters will turn, irrelevant if they've been in the Premier League and now being in the Championship, which is such a competitive league. But I think they believe that they should be really challenging. And at the moment, they look way off a team that's going to get anywhere near the promotion shake-up. So I would imagine there's been quite a lot of thinking, planning, possibly some changes ahead of this game. I saw Moses started in that aforementioned defeat at Bramall Lane and didn't play wing back. So he's had a look at one or two things. And I think naturally that will be what he does during this period when there hasn't been any games. And I don't know if it helps or hinders going into a derby match, but you'll be sure that the fans will be up for it and they won't be focused in on Rob Edwards. So it'll probably help this weekend. My only memory of this fixture, a story that I've told you too many a time, I'm sure, playing in the aftermath of our Football League trophy success after I'd been in a nightclub in a casino for 48 hours. Mick Harford tells me I've got to play in the reserves against Watford at Kenilworth Road on a Monday lunchtime. I proceed to knock one in from 25 yards on the left foot on the volley. One of the best goals I ever scored in any fixture. So maybe I should have done that more often.
Ran up to Mick and said, "What were you worried about?" Very, very impressive.
I don't think Mick was there. I think Mick had gone home to sleep it off.
I bet you were fuming it was a Resi game. We're like a couple of hundred there.
Did they used to film them in those days? Did the analysts film it? So it wasn't put out on whatever the social, MySpace or whatever it would have been at the time.
I think there was a few punters in there. It was like a Monday or a Tuesday lunchtime, but I remember being obviously in the dressing room and expecting, I think we had a game on the Saturday, but early part of the week, and obviously the celebrations had gone on. It must have been the Tuesday, and anticipating, you know, going and having the jog and the little game of head tennis and the five-a-side. And then Mick asked to see me and I still didn't put two and two together until the words came out of his mouth. I don't even think he did it in the manager's office. I think he was in the treatment room and he was like, "Fancy a game today?" And it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like too fancy a game. It was like, "You're playing." Dropped it in casually. I was devastated.
But got the goal, which is so
good. Got the goal. 4-0 win. 4-0 win, if memory serves. Yeah.
Luton would take that this weekend, that is for sure. So would Rob Edwards against the club that sacked him after 11 games. He said, "I see the Watford game as an opportunity for us. No excuse in that one not to win challenges." Now, they have recovered from a poor start like this before, Luton. 10 points at this stage in 22-23 when Edwards was appointed. What about Watford then, Clarkie? I think generally we've been pretty impressed with them, albeit not away from home, which might give Luton some encouragement. 4 defeats in a row away from the Vicarage.
Yeah, not great away from home at all. Conceded 10 goals in the last 4 away games. That's the problem. At home, absolute fortress. Some brilliant wins. You know, they beat Middlesbrough. They beat Sunderland. You know, they drew with Coventry. I think the home form is going to look after itself. I think they've shown they can be competitive at Vicarage Road against anyone in the division. But away from home, it is a concern. They were pretty dreadful, really, away at Norwich. It was a no-show at Preston, where they just didn't get going at all. And they have to be better here, because I would imagine Luton are going to be very well prepped for this game. You know, so much riding on it for Rob Edwards and his staff that I expect they're going to be full of it, really, in terms of effort and desire to make it physical. And Watford have got to match that desire and be up for it. My impressions of Watford, seen them a couple of times in the flesh, is that they're a bit open. I like a lot of their play. Some really good football, really good football. They got good energy and they spread the goals around, but they are quite easy to create chances against. You can play through them a little bit, and they've been really vulnerable to set pieces as well. And we know about Luton and how strong they are from dead balls. So that would be a concern. They've faced 52 shots already from corners and free kicks of Watford, which is the highest. And in general, they're very, very open in terms of conceding chances. So that's the worry. That said, Ogbonna's come in at the back and has been pretty good. Matty Pollock is shining, younger player alongside him in the back three. It's just what they do up front, really. Vakoum Bayo is the striker. He's the number one. He doesn't score. He didn't score very many. And I think he's been taken out of the firing line the last couple of games. They've gone with someone else, Jebison, and they've tried Quadro Bar as well. They've even tried Chakvetadze a little bit higher in a two. So, yeah, what do they do up front is the question mark. But, it's got the look of a good game. I mean, Watford's away form should give should give Luton encouragement here, I think. But they can score goals, the Hornets. And if they get the first one here, things could get a little bit tasty.
So lesser spotted fixture, this one, only been played four times since 2006, and on each occasion the home side have 1-0. We'll see what happens this weekend. Next today, though, we're going to head into League One, where Reading, of whom we are now obligated to use the prefix beleaguered, take on Crawley Town in Berkshire. Head coach Ruben Sellers has said the club will become unsustainable unless a long-awaited takeover happens soon. The bad news is they've been hit with another transfer embargo by the EFL for filing their accounts late. The good news is they've entered another exclusivity period with a potential buyer. That is a private party. That's after the takeover by the former Wickham owner Rob Couig fell through. Just really feel for Ruben Sellers, don't you, Clarkie? Because he's worked with two hands tied behind his back for basically the whole time he's been there, and we know how football is. If and when a takeover does happen, they'll probably want their own man in anyway.
Yeah, look, he's been strongly linked with Cardiff, hasn't he, Ruben Selles? So you couldn't blame him if they did dangle, you know, the offer of a contract to him. You know, I could see him walking. So they've got to be careful. He is a big asset to Reading. I think he's doing a pretty good job under massively difficult circumstances. I don't know about these. I don't know enough really to comment greatly about these consortiums. One of them is led by Mark Bertram, who Sam will know, from QPR. He's heading up a US Saudi backed consortium, which is not something you hear that often, is it? US Saudi consortiums. And then the other one is from a guy that was involved in Formula One, who's very unpopular. The fans don't want that guy. So I don't know about either of these two and whether they're going to be great for the club, but let's see. On the pitch, they're just inconsistent. They're wildly inconsistent. But why? They're young. They're just really inexperienced. 12 of the 23 players they've used this season are 21 or under. A lot of teenagers, a lot of guys playing their first pro football, really, first senior football. And they've got talent. You know, they've got Ben Elliott, you've got Chim Campbell, he's got a bit of experience. Basheman is a decent young player as well. But they're just up and down. One week they're flying, normally at home. And then they go away, where it's a little bit trickier, where you get asked a few different questions. And it's not clicking for them as much. You know, there's a little bit of frustration with the end product from the forward guys. And you probably say the same about the defenders as well. What I will say is that Sellers has kind of settled on a team now. You know, he's got Sam Smith sort of playing the Harry Kane role. He'll drop in, link play from centre forward. And then you've got Basheman and Campbell either side. The midfield's not bad. You've got the experience of Lewis Wing. You've got Ben Elliott and Harvey Nibbs. And he's kind of sticking with that. And that's probably for the best. You know, a period of stability on the pitch would probably be helpful for Reading, given what's happening off it. So look, their home form's really strong. Really strong. Not too many bad displays on their own patch. So look, this is a chance for them to go and win the game. But yeah, to compete sort of in the top half, they need to be a bit more robust away from home.
Yeah, four wins from five in the league so far in front of their own supporters. Crawley would love a record like that, Sam. We spoke about them last week, still searching for a first win since August and a first under Rob Elliott. What on earth happened against Shrewsbury last week? They were 2-1 up with less than 20 minutes to play and they lost 5-3. I reckon he's probably been working on the defending this week.
Well, they had Flint sent off for two yellows, so that obviously hugely impacted things, but yeah, it doesn't feel like this is a new problem really with Crawley, does it? I think they went up last year with quite a leaky defence. Obviously, they had that brilliant end to the season and that kind of masterclass in the playoffs, if you like. But yeah, they conceded a lot of goals last year as well. So he's going to have to hone in on that. They've lost a few, haven't they? Obviously, Maguire, Wright. I think the goalkeeper's probably impactful as well. It's Aloney in goal at the moment. When you think how good Corey Adair was for them last year. So it's a bit of a new look. Defence and clearly having issues there. They've conceded 18, only Shrewsbury and Peterborough Moore, and 13 in their last four home games, four straight defeats in front of their own fans. And in the week, they were, what, 3-0 down against Wimbledon, I think it was, in the Football League Trophy. Came back to 3-3, only for Joe Piggott to whip in a beauty for them to lose that one as well. So the last two home games have been pretty desperate from a defensive standpoint. I suppose the pluses, Will Swan got his first goal. Jeremy Kelly got came on and got a goal and will give the manager, I would think, huge food for thought that maybe he should have been in the starting lineup, and I'd anticipate seeing that here. But yeah, just that solitary win away from home, they'll probably be relatively relieved to be on the road after those last couple of results. But obviously Reading are a talented side, so you'd have to fancy them here. And early days for Rob Elliott, I don't think too much is going to change in terms of the style and the setup and the way they want to play, but they've got to find that better balance between defence and attack.
Absolutely. All right, what if you think Crawley are struggling? Get a load of Cambridge, bottom of the pile with a measly point to show for their efforts in the league thus far. The Monk in the Abbey praying for positives when Wigan come calling this weekend. Gary Monk will be in the Abbey, but not on the touchline. He's got a one-match ban after admitting to improper and or confrontational behaviour and using insulting or abusive language towards a match official during and after the U's 1-0 home defeat to Rotherham at the start of this month. Not really behaviour befitting a man of the cloth. They already look doomed to you, Sam. Is there any way back for them? They haven't managed so much as a goal in their last three games.
Oh, yeah, there's a way back for them. It's whether they persist, I suppose, with Gary Monk and what they're trying to do at the moment. I think, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist or a genius to say that, yeah, the outcome of his Cambridge tenure could be decided, I think, over the next couple of games. I think that's, you know, that's really evident from just looking at the league table and the losses that have been racking up. So he needs a victory hugely, and he's got a good opportunity here against a Wigan side that are stumbling. So I think we spoke about them a few weeks ago, and it's a very different, I think, plan for Cambridge all of a sudden, you know, that had Mark Bonner and very comfortable without the ball in their shape, Neil Harris as well to a degree. And I think Gary Monk has come in and wanted to obviously have more possession, more of the ball. Been really unfortunate with injuries. I think there was a statement released maybe a week or so ago due to the pressure on the manager and pointing towards those injuries. The likes of Gary Gardner, who he brought in, obviously vastly experienced. There's quite a lot of experience that came into the club. You can kind of count the minutes very quickly that Cousins, Jordan Cousins, Taylor Richards, Kellen Watts, Ryan Loft, Kachunga, these are all guys that should be more than good enough for the level of actually played so far this season. So there are mitigating circumstances, and also pointing towards the statistics, which should show that they should have been a little bit more free scoring in terms of the chances that they've missed and the XG that they've created. But obviously the results are the most important thing. So yeah, this is a big pressure game for Cambridge where they need a result.
Yeah. Not saying that they're seeking divine intervention, but I just double-checked their Twitter feed to see if there was a corner flag and club statement. And instead, I find that they're pleased to confirm that a multi-faith prayer room will be open at the Abbey Stadium for the first time on Saturday. So please just ask whoever it is you believe in to help out Cambridge. Wigan, then, Clarkie, 16th, but they haven't lost a game since August. They love a 0-0.
Oh, they do. They absolutely love a clean sheet. Get this. I mean, this is bad news for Gary Monk and all those praying for divine intervention. They've not let in a League One goal since Birmingham City away in August. August is a long time ago. I mean, we can tell that looking out the window. I mean, it's crazy. You know, seven games in all competitions, they've kept clean sheets now. In the entire season, they've only conceded two first half goals. So it's really solid. And what makes it even more amazing is that they're doing it with a group of young players. Not all of them, but 17 of the 26 players they've used so far are 22 and under. 22 is still a rookie age, really. You know, you're nowhere near your prime. You know, that's the bulk of that group are kids. And I think Sean Maloney deserves a massive amount of credit, not least because he's also rotated the team hugely. Like week in, week out, he's going bang. Like they're keeping these clean sheets. He's not going right, same again, lads. He's taking three or four out and he's putting another three or four in. He says he wants to keep he thinks that energy and intensity is really important part of what they do, especially without the ball. And he wants to keep players fresh. So he's doing it a different, slightly different way as well, Wigan. Obviously, the keeper's going to get a lot of credit. Sam Tickle, great name. Got a wonderful save percentage record, second best in the division. 85.7% of shots that he faces, he saves. So, yeah, look, defensively all good. But going forward, they've kind of had a few injuries. They've not really... No one's caught fire in the attacking part of the pitch. Only scored 9 goals this season, which is why they're not in and around the playoffs. You know, picking up 1 point instead of 3. So that's the issue. But they might only need one at the Abbey to win this game. 2 max. So, yeah, I'd still make them favourites.
Mm. Interesting game, that one. Interesting squad Wickham have got as well. Of course, Jamie Carragher's son lines up for them in defence. Dale Taylor, we know, can get goals at this level.
Loads of loanees, aren't there? Yeah,
yeah,
tons of loanees. All
still
kids.
Thomas, you know, sort of, Dion Rankin. And Callum McManaman still knocking about as well. We ought to do a Wigan special one of these days. Maybe not this week, though. Let's head into League Two, where the Alex and the Amis are set to square off at the venue formerly known as Gresty Road, now known formally and informally as the rather dour Mournflake Stadium. Crewe got the whiff of the playoffs, as well as Mournflakes, Clarkie, in their nostrils. They've gone on a run of just one defeat in 8 league games.
What's a Mournflake?
Don't know. Shall I look it up? Yeah. Sounds like a really depressing cereal, doesn't it? Like, why would you want to start? They do lots of different cereals, by the look of it. They're Millers of Mighty Oats since 1675 in Cheshire, and that's all the promotion I'm going to give them because they ain't giving us any money.
No, this is true. Yeah, we don't go over the top. Yeah, Crewe, another team that don't really let in goals, not at home anyway. You might remember them getting spanked 5-0 by Chesterfield at home not that long ago. Well, since then, 4 clean sheets on the spin at their own patch. And actually, across the division or the season as a whole, they've faced, you know, the third fewest amount of shots. So they're very good at sort of keeping teams at arm's length. They don't have goal scorers either. Kane Hemmings is top scorer with 3. He's out at the moment. Shiloh Tracy is the only other player that scored more than 1. He's kind of the only fit striker they've got at the moment. I think Chris Long might be coming back soon. Omar Bogle as well. So they've been missing a lot of the guys at the top end of the pitch. So I think they're doing really well, considering just to pick up results. I don't know if you saw the goal last week. There's a brilliant goal from Max Conway, who's the left wing back. Slalomed his way right through about 3, 4, 5 players down the middle of the pitch to score his first goal in pro football. They've kind of been relying on moments like that, really, so far this season. So, yeah, they'll need to get those strikers back fit and firing if they're going to make the playoffs like you think they might, Matt. But yeah, defensively, pretty good. Yeah, they're an excellent team without the ball.
Salford, I mean, we've been fairly critical of them, Sam, over the last few years for how they've gone about things. See what you make of this. Listener and a friend of mine, the excellent author David Marples, went to see them against Grimsby last week. And he said that they look a mess. They certainly don't play much football. Their best player by a mile was the tricky winger, Kelly Namai. David says they look a mess. Nicky Butt stepping down as CEO. Chris Casper's recently left too. Is it all going a bit sour for the class of 92? They seem to have stagnated, don't they, over the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, although you'd probably look at the manager and look at the squad of players that he's put together this summer and think they should have enough to be top half minimum, maybe pushing to get in those playoffs still when you look at some of the names. But yeah, I think obviously they would have hoped and believed they would have been, you know, higher than this, League One, possibly knocking on the door of the Championship by now. I think that would have been the reality of the situation. So there's been mistakes made. I wouldn't be able to focus in on any one area, but I think it's difficult when you're a relatively new EFL club and you haven't got that history behind you, I suppose, that ethos running through and producing your own players, albeit Kelly and Mai, I think, is a Dutch-born lad, but has been over a long time within their system. So he's one I think you could point towards to try and encourage other youngsters to maybe see their start to their footballing journey with Salford. So, yeah, I look at the team at the moment and, I mean, it's a back three, but it feels like a Carl Robinson team because they've got Mai on one side, Taylor on the other side, John Taylor, that's from Doncaster, who's played a lot of football as a front player. Then you've got McElhenney and a front two. So it looks very attack-minded with Josh Austerfield, Salma Ashley, two holding players who are probably just in there to sit while the other five go forward and try and create. And that Grimsby game, they had 27 shots. Jackson Smith in goal for Grimsby had to make 10 saves, which I think is a number that I haven't seen too often when I'm clicking on that column statistic-wise after games. But an XG of 1.41, so maybe not creating the type of opportunity that Cole Stockton, for one, normally gobbles up. He has got going with two in the last three league games. So, yeah, and the XG is the third lowest across the season, four. So they're not making bundles of chances. They haven't been. And to see them with only seven goals at this stage is quite strange, because I think of Salford not being, you know, a team that's reliant on how they defend. It's probably a little bit more free scoring in the future. And at the moment, they're defending pretty well, which is probably not in keeping with the way Carl Robinson's teams normally play. So maybe that's adding a little bit of credence to what your chum said there. It's a little bit all over the place at the moment, but I would expect them to improve. The players they brought in, Tom Edwards from Stoke, Ben Woodburn, someone that Robinson's had before, Adelican, you know, always going to be a threat in League Two. I think a good bunch of experienced players brought in to help the splattering of youth that they've got in that squad as well. So I'd expect them to improve, but yeah, whether it's going to be a season they're going to be in a shake-up, again, I think it's going to be a frustrating one for the ownership.
Have the documentary stopped on Salford? I don't think there's been one.
I haven't seen it for a while.
No, exactly. It just feels like we've butt stepping down. Gary Neville's taken a sort of moved away from it as well, hasn't he? I think Giggs is still there, isn't he? In quite a key position. But it does feel, with Casper going as well, I don't know. The impression is that they're losing a bit of interest, which is obviously a concern for Salford City fans. It does feel like the ceiling is maybe not as high as they imagined it to be, do you think?
Mm. Ran for six seasons, according to IMDb, which is probably more than anybody really needed to see, frankly. But yeah, let's see. Let's see where they go. It'll be interesting to keep an eye on, that's for sure. Some big games then ahead this weekend. Next today, we're going to bring back the scouting report. Right, Adrian, we've spoken a lot about clean sheets there with our friends at Wigan. Down at the other end of the country, Exeter have registered a fair few as well, thanks in no small part to their on-loan goalkeeper. Tell me more.
Yes, on-loan from Crystal Palace, Joe Whitworth. Eagles fans will know about him because he played in the Premier League last season when they were short, when they had a bit of an injury crisis. He came in for a couple of games. He was the under-21s player of the season last year as well. And he's out on loan at Exeter, and he is the only goalkeeper with a better save percentage than Sam Tickle. 86.05% save accuracy. That is phenomenal. Just to give you an idea, in the Premier League last year, Murich had the highest with 79%, 79 point something, and he only did it from a sample size of 10 games. So, you know, 86% is excellent. And what makes Joe Whitworth so interesting is that he's smaller than me. he's under 5'9". Which I think must make him one of the shortest goalkeepers in English football. Certainly one of the best goalkeepers of his height that we've seen in many, many years. I mean, Sam, have you ever come across a goalkeeper? Have you ever played with a keeper that's 5'9" or less? You have?
George Campos.
Yeah, right. But it's just really unusual, isn't it? So you automatically think, oh, he's going to struggle in, you know, coming to collect crosses. And I'm sure, you know, I haven't seen enough of him to say whether that's a big problem. But, you know, they don't see that many set pieces, Exeter. I know that he's worked really hard at sort of problem solving that with the defenders around him. You know, maybe probably doesn't come out for as many things as other keepers might, but his shot stopping is unbelievable. Really sharp reflexes. He's got really quick feet, as you might imagine. So, and he's shown that. He's put in some brilliant performances recently. I think the Wigan game, the Orient game, the Cambridge game, all pulled off really quick, lightning fast reflex save. So yeah, I mean, he's worth keeping an eye on. Clearly a very, very talented goalkeeper. And according to our pals at Opta, he's prevented 6.6 extra goals already this season for Exeter City. So, yeah, he's and that's after getting off to a slightly dodgy start where he made one or two errors. So, yeah, Joe Whitworth is loved by Exeter fans at the moment. And it looks like they've got themselves another excellent loanee goalkeeper. So, yeah, keep your eye on the name.
They're in good nick, Palace, because of Owen Goodman, the Wimbledon goalkeepers on loan from there as well. Feels like Palace collect. Didn't they have two England goalkeepers on the books? Was that last season?
Sam Johnson and Dean Henderson would have been.
Simultaneously, yeah. So, two young lads. I think Goodman's a really good keeper. I thought he was great at Colchester last year and obviously keeping loads of clean sheets at Wimbledon as well. So keep an eye on those two.
He's massive as well, isn't he? So it must be quite the dynamic in training, or it was.
Listen, the name on the tip of your tongue was Pedro Benitez, Paraguay's goalkeeper at the 1930 World Cup, 5'5". According to this blog that I've just found, he's the shortest goalkeeper in the history of football. All right, so from short keepers on to another loanee, but not a goalkeeper. Jay Benn, Sam, is the player that you've picked this week.
Yeah, I saw him obviously in that Bradford-Newport game. I think I referenced him on last week's podcast. But yeah, quite an interesting story. Came from Halifax to Lincoln, so not long been playing in the EFL or at an EFL club. And I think he's from Bradford, so obviously this loan probably perfect for him to get a little bit of game time in League Two. And he's only played the last three, and he's been playing in place of Brad Halliday, who's a long time Bradford player, fan favourite. He actually played right centre back in the last game just to get him in the team due to the injuries that Graham Alexander has had at centre half. But Jay Benn's the nominal right wing back at the moment. And yeah, it was an eye-catching performance against Newport. He made the two of the three goals, which obviously took the headlines. Two different deliveries, and that's what I really liked about him, the variety. I think when he got to the dead ball line or when he was in crossing positions, the first one he dug out, which is, I always say, is really difficult to do when you're moving fast, to kind of clip it towards the far post. But it was perfect for Andy Cook, who obviously gobbles those type of opportunities up, as he did on the night. And the second one for Bobby Poynton, which was the crucial third in the game, was kind of Trent Alexander-Arnold, if you like, you know, picking out a runner from midfield, loads of pace on the delivery. And it meant that cutback, and it meant that the goal scorer just had to take it, help it on its way first time. So, and that was the biggest thing about him, actually, his variety and his passing and his distribution. You know, I love it when you see a wing back, a full back, get their head up and punch it into the midfield players or punch it into the front players. So he had a really nice right foot. Yeah, and combined nicely with players on that side. And it looks like he was equally as impressive at Tranmere last time out. Only Richie Smallwood in the midfield, obviously their kind of linchpin, more touches, more passes. So it looks like he was heavily involved there. And in contrast, it was actually Tyreek Wright on the left-hand side who probably had the more ball in that game that I saw. But really caught the eye, and expect him to do well there this year and possibly be a big contributing factor, I think, in Bradford going close this year, because the last two performances, after a bit of a dodgy start, very, very impressive. Tenacious as well without the ball. Most tackles in his team, most interceptions in that victory at Tranmere. The one negative I wanted to bring up, he did get done a couple of times kind of in transition in that game against Newport. They obviously had quite a sizable, in contrast to the goalkeeping conversation a few moments ago. Carl Hodlin's about 6'9" up front for Newport. So when they weren't looking for him, they did try and bring in the wingers, and a couple of times he got caught out on that flank, and they did put a few dangerous balls in from the left-hand side. So maybe his strength is in attack, and yeah, I'll have to work a little bit on his defending. But for someone new to first team football, relatively new in the EFL, outstanding that night, and definitely someone to keep an eye on.
All right, we will do. Jay Benn and Joe Whitworth, the subjects of this week's scouting reports. Okay, it's predictions time for the weekend ahead, chaps. Let's reflect on last weekend first. Chesterfield Notts was our first game. We did a League Two special. It finished 2-2. I was the only person who got a point from this one. I said it would be 1-1. You two both predicted an away victory, which it very nearly was, of course. Wimbledon-Carlisle, this was one that Sam was at, parting into the wee small hours after the victory for the host. 4-0, a point for both of you here. 2-1, Adrian said. 3-1, Sam said. I said 2-2. And MK Dons, Port Vale, nobody got any points for that one because Port Vale won 1-0. And frankly, we didn't see that coming. So we each get a point from that, which means that Sam continues to have a healthy lead, I think, Adrian.
He does, yeah. 23 for Sam. 23 for Sam. 14 for me. 10 for you, Matt. You're into double figures, finally.
Oh, wow. I like that little bit of shade. Let's see if we can change it this weekend. From the championship, we've picked QPR against Portsmouth. Sam, QPR's your team, so you can go first here.
I would happily, if I was backed into a corner, take 1-0 either way here. So considering what you've just said, I'll take 1-0 Rangers.
Adrian?
I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go with Pompey. Not really impressed with QPR of late. Pompey have been stewing for a while. They need a win. I think they can get, I think this is one ground they can go to in the championship and maybe get something. So 2-1 Pompey for me.
Wow. Goals in the game. 1-2. I will go for 1-1 in that one. Bolton Burton next up. Remember when we were bigging up Burton, Sam, at the start of the season? That's gone brilliantly for us, hasn't it? What do you think here, Adrian?
Can't see anything other than a home win. I think Bolton have got over their early season blues. Solid, controlled, 2-0 win.
Nice. Okay, Sam?
I feel like I'm going to raise Clarkey there. 3-0.
I'm going to say 4-1. We're going for a home win. I'll go first on the last one. It's Accrington against Barrow. I think this is a comfortable away win for Barrow. 0-2, I would say here. What about you, Adrian?
I'll see it slightly differently. I think Accrington have won the last couple of games and Barrow aren't scoring very many goals. They're involved in a lot of low scoring matches, Barrow. So I'm going to give Stanley a shot at this. 1-1.
Okay. Sam?
Yeah, I probably would have had the 1-1, but what the hell of it? I'll go for Aki, 3 on the spin, 1-0.
Okay, we shall update you with how we get on with that next week, listener. We are nearly done for today, but of course I've got a tweet of the week. I believe that this is the quintessential footballer's tweet. It comes from Swindon's Danny Butterworth, at Butty18Danny, and he puts a picture of him celebrating a goal, says, "Big 3 points today and great shift from the boys, exclamation mark, football emoji, travelling fans were class, exclamation mark, applause emoji." Sam, this is everything you've ever wanted from a footballer's tweet, isn't it?
You're just missing the "say something like" at the start of it from the agent, right? Yeah, it's not good, is it? It's not good, but I'm not going to have a go at one of the lads down in SM1. I like the look of the kit, so I probably need to
That's
get
a nice kit, isn't it?
I need to get a couple of them, don't I? Size 3 and 4, or whatever it is. Lovely, but yeah, not his finest work. I will be having a word when I grace the county ground.
He's got form for it, Clarkey. 26th of March. The boys deserve more from the weekend, but we go again Friday. Happy to grab 2 goals. Football emoji. Do you think he's doing this himself?
I do. I just think save your breath, save your fingers, save your time, Danny. You're not offering us much there, are you? It's almost as if he's trolling Sam Parkin, isn't it? It's almost as if he's trying to get on here by producing tweets as bland as possible.
It goes back to the very start, doesn't it, of this this feature, when we said it's something that would never, ever be typed out if you'd had a stinker or if you'd had an average game. It's always when you're a 7 or above, isn't it? Because you're just getting that love reciprocated.
Yeah,
that's certainly what he got in the replies. Right, before we go, let me remind you that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers at sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions-sports-up-250. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and run the National Gambling Helpline. The link to them, to the promotion, are both in the episode description. You're going to have to entertain yourselves for a little while, listener, because we are taking a little pause next week because Adrian and I are both on holiday, half term, isn't it? But we'll be back with you in a fortnight's time to talk about everything that we've missed and everything that is still to come. Until then, enjoy the football. Bye for now.